It's great to be able to meet and sing, and I sort of felt like, thank you, that we're going to another place, and looking forward to the day that the trumpet is called and we can all go and be with God. Tonight we are speaking about changing lives. And there's dead silence. Please send your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Something that I've certainly been praying about over the last couple of weeks, months, what have you, is really the month of August, and for us to be able to have a great opportunity to help friends become Christians and for people to be able to come out to church, get to know more of the Bible. And I think Sunday was very encouraging for me on a personal level to be able to see so many new people come out of church and make decisions on the principle of the path. And Michaela's school teacher came out on Sunday. She and her boyfriend came and visited church. And when I went to school on Monday morning, she was talking about principle of the path with the other teachers. And we're talking about, you know, that it's your direction and not your intention that determines your destination. And she had a little key ring and what have you. And it was just so superb to be able to see that we are able to change lives. And that's what we want to talk a bit about tonight. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3 from verse 5, I'll read there from verse 5, says, "What after all is Apollos, and what is Paul? Only servants through whom you came to believe as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God made it grow. So neither he who plants nor he who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The man who plants and the man who waters have but one purpose, and each will be rewarded according to his own labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building." This is such a tremendous scripture talking about the partnership that we have with God in changing lives. Paul says here that we are God's fellow workers. Says that we plant, one of us plants, another waters, we all work together, but ultimately it is God that brings everything into alignment, and God is the one that ultimately makes things grow. One of the things that I've been thinking of for about the last year or so, and so we often speak about how long did it take you to become a Christian? And then we refer to people like Stephanie or Pierre Miller. Some of the folks that took a little bit longer. I know Johan van Staden, he took a bit of a while there. There's still boot marks in the driveway to church as he came in. And we look at those situations and we say, well, it took you so long to become a Christian. And one of the things that I've been thinking of is that I studied the Bible over a period of about 6 weeks, of which 3 weeks I was out of town, so about 3 weeks. Some people like Alicia studied the Bible. She came to church on a Sunday, and the next Sunday she was baptized. That was a quick one. And she's still faithful a year. How many years later? 10 years later. And so we think this is how long it took. But what I came to the conclusion of is that it did not take me 6 weeks. It took 19 years. That's how old I was when I became a Christian. Mike Renton was 66, eh, Mike? Something like that. Okay. It took Mike 66 years to become a Christian, because God doesn't just start working in our lives the time that we come out of church. It is from birth that God works in our lives and places different things in our path to be able to help us. And so different people plant, different people water, but God is making that grow. And maybe when you first came out of church, or maybe when you first in your own heart started seeing things, that's just sort of a climax that God reached as He was working in your lives. But God is the one continually, every day, changing lives, and He's merely calling us to assist Him as His fellow workers in this job. It's amazing if you study the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 2 verse 47, we know this passage. It says that, "And the Lord," and we sometimes forget those two words, or three words, "and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved." It wasn't the apostles that added. It wasn't the church that added. They were fellow workers, but it was God that made it grow, and it was God who added to their number daily those who were being saved. Acts chapter 8, we don't have to turn there. Who sent Philip out into the desert? Wasn't it an angel of the Lord that sent Philip into the desert to meet an extremely open Ethiopian eunuch sitting there on the coach? We don't look at that story and say, wow, Philip, you're the hero. Philip was merely obedient to what God said to him. He said, go, I'm sending you. But it was the Lord that sent him. Who was it that knocked Saul to the ground in Acts chapter 9? Was it Ananias? Was it Peter? Was it one of the other Christians? Or was it the Lord that knocked him down and then worked with Ananias in helping him becoming a Christian? In Acts chapter 16, I love this story. Paul and Silas is in jail. They've been jailed for teaching the word. They are singing hymns to God. And what happens? An earthquake comes. Who sent the earthquake? Paul? Was it Silas? Was it Peter? It says, the Lord sent an earthquake. The doors flung open. The earth was shaken. The jailer says, listen here, I'm going to kill myself. Everyone's gone. Then Paul says, no, hold on. We're all still here. And what does the jailer say? Sirs, what must I do to be saved? Who sort of took it to the finish line? Paul and Silas. Who made this thing grow? Who turned and changed, started the process and continued the process of changing their lives and merely used as tools as mortals in the way? God is the one that changes lives and purely chooses to partner with us. It is our privilege to partner in this great, exciting journey of being able to be part of people's lives as they change. Take a look in John chapter 4. In John chapter 4, I'll tell you a bit of a story as you turn. In John chapter 4, Jesus is sitting at the well. We sing a song about that. I'm going to get Jock to do his moves up here and sing it. Jock has done some shocking stuff on stage here. We've put him on a sabbatical for a while. Stage sabbatical with his snake in his move. Jesus sends the disciples in town. They go and buy some food. He's sitting at Jacob's well. A Samaritan woman comes along to draw some water. Jesus strikes up a conversation with her. Starts talking about her spiritual life. Starts talking about the fact that he says, go and call your husband. Many of us know the story. And she's still talking about it. And then he says, listen, the man you're with now, we know it's not your husband because we also know that you've had five men before him. And eventually starts talking to her about that she actually needs the water, the spring of water that will last into eternity that can only come from him. Do you guys know the story? Yeah. At that time, the disciples come back. And we catch up in the story in John chapter 4, verse 27. Then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman. Surprised. This didn't happen usually. But no one asked, what do you want? Or why are you talking with her? Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to town and said to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? They came out of town and made their way towards him. Skip down to verse 39. Many of the Samaritans from the town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we have heard it for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world. It says that at this moment, many people, what is many? Is it 5? Is it 10? I don't know. But many became believers. Why? Because of one woman's testimony. The amazing thing in this story is not only the power of God as he uses this instance, but actually who it is that he uses to be able to help many become believers. I think we tend to think that if we want to be workers with God in his vineyard, then we need to be perfect. We need to have all our ducks in a row. We need to be walking closely to Jesus. We need to be able to have the best possible marriage, be the best possible parent, and be as closely to him as we could possibly be. And then when we are perfect, then he can actually use us. And we too can be a co-worker in his field, changing lives. But this is not what we see in the Samaritan woman. It says here, this woman, she's had 5 husbands, and she was now on guy number 6. I don't think I've ever met anyone who's been married 5 times. She was married 5 times, lived with another man, and yet God said, I can and want to use you to change lives. To be a co-worker. You'll plant, you'll do a bit of watering, but I'll make it grow. I will make these lives change. You don't have to be perfect to be used by God. And your life doesn't have to be in perfect shape. I think sometimes we think that when everything in my life has worked out, when all the kids are healthy, when all the marriage problems are solved, when all the bills are paid, when everything works out and there's no more calamity, then I can put myself forward and God can use me. I'm so encouraged by Beraldine Jochers, who is one of the most evangelistic people that I know. She constantly has friends out. She is constantly sharing her faith with different people. Let me read you a letter written by her. Hi. I just want to give you a bit of her background. Hi. My name is Beraldine Jochers. I was abandoned by my parents when I was 2 months old. I grew up with my adopted mom, who passed away when I was 12 years old. This was a crucial stage in my life as I was entering my teenage years and resulted in me making very bad choices, one of them being falling pregnant at age 19. The father of my unborn child was emotionally immature and unstable, and I could not see a future with him. 8 months into my pregnancy, I met my husband. I saw him as hardworking, loyal, caring, compassionate, someone that I could spend the rest of my life with, and he made me feel safe. But 4 years into our marriage, I felt trapped and I wanted out. It was during this time that Amanda Creel, who is now a disciple in Johannesburg, Van Aysen, invited me to a Bible discussion, which I only attended 2 weeks later. As I started studying the Bible, I realized that my life was in a mess. I saw that I was doing the opposite of what God wanted me to do. The Bible exposed who I really was, and I didn't like the picture. At that stage, I was still unaware of the many things that would come my way. A few years later, my youngest son was born. This was a faith-building time for me. Before he was born, it was discovered that he had an enlarged kidney. I feared the unknown and kept praying and trusting God. 4 years later, an ultrasound was done, and they discovered that his kidney was normal, which was a mystery to the doctors. At that time, I felt incredibly relieved until I discovered that my 12-year-old son was experimenting with drugs. I was devastated and didn't believe that things could get any worse in my life. I felt like a failure as a parent and questioned God. Why, God? Why have I not gone through enough? I felt sorry for myself, helpless, hopeless, and in total despair. As time passed, he was in and out of rehabilitation centers, and it saddened me to see him continue destroying his life. He stole everything of value out of my and others' homes to feed his addiction, and this resulted in a huge amount of family conflict and disunity. He became extremely aggressive and unmanageable, to the point of even threatening me with a knife. I felt saddened and afraid at the same time. He eventually ended up in prison at age 17. I was beside myself and cried myself to sleep most nights, thinking of all the things that could be happening to him in prison. These episodes became regular, and I felt more powerless each time. During this time, I became incredibly dependent on prayer and had a spiritual breakthrough. I realized that I was completely powerless over my son, and that I had to let go and let God. These hardships have made me more reliant on God and less on myself. I realize that I cannot do for my son what he needs to do for himself. This is his journey. This is something that I continually need to battle with, and it has taught me to rely on God on a daily basis. As Paul said in 2 Corinthians, we were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, in our hearts we felt the sentence of death, but this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we have set our hope that he will continue to deliver us as you help us by your prayers. My trials and temptations have rarely prevented me from reaching out to others. To the contrary, it has created in me a greater desire to share this message of reconciliation with all who feel powerless, hopeless, and in despair. For in God, they too can find hope, freedom, and peace. It is amazing how God can use us, and even in our difficult circumstances, to still be able to be moved to change others' lives as he is changing our life. This woman in John chapter 4, her life must have been in a mess. But it was changed. And even with that messy life, God used her to change the lives of others. Sometimes I think, and I've certainly thought that way before, that we need to be people's people to be able to be evangelistic. Ever felt that? Who's ever felt that? You need to really be a people's person if you want to... There we go. Okay. Reconnecting. I ask you, how much of a people's person could this woman at the well have been when she was on husband number 6? I don't know what her relationships were like, but one thing that I know is that she's gone through several husbands. I don't think she was much of a people person, yet God used her. We think that we need to be incredibly eloquent. We need to know our stuff. We need to be able to present, as it says in Peter, we need to be able to present the Bible almost perfectly to others. And only when we are able to do that, we are able to change lives with God, be co-workers with them, and make a difference. How eloquent was she? Take a look in verse 28. It says, then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, here's her story, here's her pitch. Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? They came out of the town and made their way towards him. That's it. That was their story. Come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? She didn't even say it is the Christ. She said, could this be the Christ? And God worked, and the people came out in droves. It's as simple as that, when God is at work. Sometimes I think that we need a huge amount of time to be able to share our faith, and the only people that have that availability of time to them would obviously be one, full-time ministers, and two, campus students. Now, how much time did it take this woman to say, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? Let's time it. Okay, you can press start and then I'll go. Go. Could, even make a mistake, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? 12 seconds. It did not even take her 30 seconds to be able to share these words, but God could use the words and set into motion the changing of many lives. We do not have to beat the street every day. Who of us does not have 30 seconds in our day to be able to just say something? Listen, just come and see. Come and see what God is doing. Come and see what I have seen. Could this possibly be the Christ? Could God possibly be there at work? 30 seconds. It's all that it takes to set into motion the changing of lives. I've got another letter for you from Tefu. I became a disciple as a teenager. By the time I was 17, I was a straight A student and had several companies contacting my mom, hoping to persuade her to encourage me to sign up with them. They promised free housing, medical aid, water and electricity, cars, and even education for my future kids. It sounded incredibly promising, and I had no idea what I would even do with that kind of salary. But I turned it down. Why? Because there were no disciples that I knew of in those mining towns. Several months later, though, in a moment, through sin, I lost everything. Maria and I left the church and had nowhere to turn. I ended up homeless with a pregnant girlfriend on the streets of Johannesburg. I hit the lowest of lows. I was in shock and broke the law several times in order to find food for my pregnant girlfriend and unborn child. At one point, I ended up in jail. We even considered an abortion, but our plans did not succeed. I tried searching for God once again, but Satan convinced me that God wanted nothing to do with me. I prayed, fasted, and I read the Bible profusely, but in the end, I gave up crying myself to sleep for many nights. During this time, we decided to move to Cape Town in order to get away from all these painful memories. On a few occasions, we briefly spoke about how good it would be to raise our children in the church. But in general, I didn't like talking about God. I was angry with God for allowing so much difficulty in my life, and this after I've given him the best years of my youth. I felt distant, tormented, and like a complete failure. But in the midst of all this, Maria never gave up on God. She continued to beg him night after night that he would have mercy on our souls. Then one evening, Maria took the night shift as a waitress at our local St. Elmo's restaurant. That night, a family, on the spur of the moment, decided to have dinner at St. Elmo's. Maria was their waitress for the night and immediately picked up that they were different because of their love and their kindness. As they were about to leave, Charmaine Doyle invited Maria to go to church with her. Soon afterwards, we started studying the Bible once again with Greg and Charmaine. Later on, Cyril, Chris, Vincent, and James also joined in the Bible studies. Through the scriptures, they showed me how deeply God loved me and how he longed for me to return. And although I clearly understood the scriptures, it was these brothers' love, warmth, kindness, and humility that brought it home for me. They reflected the love and grace of God that I so deeply longed for. We're incredibly thankful to God that he took us back. And we are grateful for Charmaine, even though she was very pregnant at the time, cared enough to reach out to us. And all this took place in 30 seconds. That is all what it takes to set into motion the changing of many lives. Some of you guys might know Gudani, some might not. But Gudani, that seems very small. Can you guys see up there? Gudani is a small fellow. Gudani reached out to a friend of his in class, Joseph, started studying the Bible with him, and Joseph became a Christian. There's Joseph. Then Joseph reached out to his girlfriend, Doreen, and she became a Christian. Then Doreen went home to Tanzania to be with the church there, and she reached out to her sister, Rose, who later moved back to Cape Town and became a Christian on UCT. She also reached out to her neighbor, Maureen, and became a disciple in Tanzania and later moved to UCT. When she moved to UCT, she reached out to her friend Zahura, who became a disciple on UCT. And she also reached out to Upendu, who got baptized and became a disciple on UCT. Where did it start? Gudani took 30 seconds to care enough to share his faith with one man. How many of you guys remember Valencia Falkvane? Okay. Now, she moved to London several years ago. What I don't think most of us know is that one day she went sharing her faith in the streets of London and she met Lauren. That's today in Cape Town. Lauren moved to Cape Town, became a Christian, moved down to Cape Town and started studying the Bible at the University of Stellenbosch. Then, on one of her school assignments, she had to go and do training or be trained at a hospital. At the hospital, she met Rizan. Rizan also was studying to be a nurse at that time. Both of them were, and neither of them continued that, but they met each other there. Rizan became a disciple. One day, Rizan shared her faith on campus, and she met Monique. Monique then reached out to one of the girls in her maths class, Chanel, who studied the Bible and became a disciple. Chanel then obviously invited her mom to church, Haniki. Haniki came to church, and she became a disciple. Meanwhile, Monique also invited her lab partner, Marley, who came to church, started studying the Bible, and she became a disciple. Meanwhile, Lauren and Rizan also met Lihandi on campus, and they helped her become a disciple. Lihandi then reached out to her classmate, Michelle, and Michelle became a disciple. Then Michelle invited her mom, Ingrid, and a very skeptical dad at that time, Marius, to come to church, and they both became disciples. Where did it start? How did it happen? It happened when Valencia said, listen, let me not think about myself. Let me take out 30 seconds. Let me just go and share my faith. And let me see if I can meet someone who would be interested in coming to church, coming to Bible talk, or studying the scriptures. Lauren was that person. From there, the wheels were set into motion and many people became Christians. Back in 1987, there was a sister called Lavanya who currently lives in Chicago. She reached out to a lady in Johannesburg called Avis. And she helped Avis to become a disciple. Avis had a brother whom she invited out to church. And that brother was no one else than Paul Keane. So Paul Keane came out of church and he became a disciple. Then Paul Keane eventually moved to Cape Town. And he was one day in the CNA with some other brothers and Maynard Moore. They reached out to None other than Reinhard Moers. And Reinhard became a disciple. Meanwhile, Paul then invited one of his other friends to church, Steve Reeves, and he became a disciple. Then one day, Paul and another brother from the United States met, many of us know, Ben Hammond. And Ben Hammond became a disciple. Then Ben's parents were a little bit skeptical about what he was doing, so Hammond and Marty came to church, and they became disciples. Then his sister, Anna Tobia, followed, and she became a disciple. Meanwhile, Warren had become a disciple in Cape Town. He grew up in the church, went through some tough times. Paul also went through some tough times. Warren came back, helped Paul back, and then together they also helped his brother Jason come back or become a disciple. Even before Jason, obviously, Warren had a girlfriend, that is his wife today, Yelita. She came out of church and she became a disciple. When her brother saw the changes that she was making in her life, he decided to move from London to come to Cape Town to see what on earth was happening here, and then he became a disciple. Now, while all this was still happening, or before even this, still back in Joburg, Paul reached out to Willem and Chantal, a brother and sister in Johannesburg. They became disciples. He also reached out to someone who stayed in his complex, Axion, a brother in Johannesburg. He became a disciple. When he eventually, obviously, back moved to Cape Town, he started working at Paul Print. There he met Andre, whom he reached out to for 5 years. Shame on you, Andre. Where's... I reached out to for 5 years. And eventually, Andre, very recently, he became a disciple. While he was reaching out to Andre and Andre thinking about it, he also reached out to Carl for 2 years. Till he eventually one day convinced Carl to actually give me a call to ask me if he could study the Bible, if I could study the Bible with him. So Carl started coming out of church. We studied the Bible with him. He became a Christian. He then brought his wife, Marika. She came to church, and she became a Christian. Where did it all start? One single soul, Lavanya, saying, "Let me share my faith." In London, a couple of years ago, there was a guy named Calvin. Calvin drove the bus, and he was on the bus. And while he was on the bus, he reached out to someone on the bus named Chris van Staden. Chris, the sinful man that he was at that time, did not respond quickly, but became a Christian 1 year later. He had a roommate, equally sinful as him, named Minnick. But he invited Minnick to come to church with him. Minnick came, studied the Bible, and he became a Christian. 2 months later, they decided that they need to come or move to Cape Town and reach out to people here. So Minnick, one day, as he shared his faith in Tiger Valley, met Creswell. And Creswell became a Christian. But even before Minnick invited Creswell, he invited his brother Jared. Jared came out of church, and he became a Christian. Jared had a school friend, and the school friend's name was Gustav. So Gustav came out of church, and he became a Christian. Meanwhile, Chris also shared his faith in the mall and met Michael Lachransi, and he became a Christian. He also in the mall met Stefan, and Stefan became a Christian. Later on, we went and we started campus ministry in Stellenbosch. Chris went with me there and he met Zippo, Jacques Groenewald. He became a Christian. Then one day, Jacques went to the spa, and as he bought something at the spa, he shared with Hannes, and Hannes became a Christian. Then Hannes brought his girlfriend Nicolisa. She studied the Bible and she became a Christian. Meanwhile, Zippo was busy. So in Somerset West, he bumped into JP. He met JP, invited him to Bible talk, started studying the Bible with him, and JP became a Christian. Meanwhile, Chris bumped into Rian, who was an old school friend of him of years ago. They hardly knew each other. They started studying the Bible, and he became a Christian. Then one day, Rian was walking in the mall in Tiger Valley, and he met Peter Hutting, and Peter Hutting became a Christian. But when Chris also came back, he tried to convince mom and dad to move to Cape Town. They moved, Johan with an unopened heart, Bella with a more open heart, Bella became a Christian. Obviously, years later, Bella continued to bring Johan to church, and Johan became a Christian. When both of them were Christians, they started trying to influence Barend with Minnick and some friends, and Barend became a Christian. When Barend came to church, he brought Kubi along, and Kubi became a Christian. Where did it start? One dude, sitting on a bus, most probably thinking to himself, should I, shouldn't I, should I, shouldn't I? Should I, shouldn't I, shouldn't I, shouldn't I? Should I invite him, should I not? He invited him, took 1 year, but of his time, 30 seconds. So I care enough to set into motion what it is that God can do. Because my guess is that Calvin does not even know what happened through this all. Back in 1988, back in the day, A brother named Angus Douglas was in the McDonald's in Boston, United States. And he saw a couple eating at McDonald's, having dinner, saying a prayer. He went over them and he invited them to church. That couple was Cyril and Carol Stevens. They became Christians back in Boston. Then Cyril was studying there, had to move back to South Africa. That time there was no church in Cape Town, so he asked for a transfer to Johannesburg, so he actually moved to Johannesburg. But on his way to Johannesburg from the United States, they stopped over in the UK. While they stopped over there, they spoke to Elaine, who was Carol's cousin, who became a Christian only 18 years later. When they eventually arrived here, Carol also invited her sister Patricia, who became a Christian, who invited her husband Benny, who became a Christian, and Benny has passed on to be with the Lord. Cyril also one day, a group of them went sharing in Blue Root Mall, and they met Uncle Tommy. Do you guys remember Uncle Tommy? Back then he was in his 80s. Uncle Tommy lived a full life till age 93 when he went on to be with the Lord. He's outlived four wives, Uncle Tommy. He said to me one day when I visited him, he said, "These wives kept on dying, so I married a young bookie." So he married a lady in her 60s when he was in his 80s. But anyway, Carol also invited her other sister, Julia, and Julia became a Christian. She invited her childhood friend, Gloria Berger, to church, and Gloria became a Christian. Gloria invited her daughter, Darlene, to church, and she became a Christian. She then invited Leonie to church, and Leonie became a Christian. Then Gloria invited her sister, Linda Meyer, and Linda Meyer became a Christian. Linda Meyer then reached out to the other sister, Gail, and she became a Christian. Then she reached out to her other sister, Val, and she became a Christian. Then they reached out to their dad, Henry, and he became a Christian. And Henry has died to go and be with the Lord. Gail then invited her daughter, Cindy, and she became a Christian. Then eventually, they lost a little bit track of stories. As a Bible talk then, they invited Marlene and she became a Christian. They invited Lillian and she became a Christian. Then they invited Bonita and she became a Christian. They invited Morita and Morita became a Christian. And Morita had a young child. And that young child's name was Cliff Dean. And obviously very recently, Cliff Dean became a disciple. But Marita then also helped Elizabeth to become a Christian, and she also helped Rosaline to become a Christian. And then that whole lot together as a Bible talk helped Bernice become a disciple. And Bernice then helped Edna become a disciple and Peter become a disciple. And all in all, there were about 27 people that became disciples. Because why? Because one man sat in a McDonald's and most properly asked himself, should I, shouldn't I? Should I, shouldn't I? I don't know if I have the time. Let me take out the 30 seconds and walk up to that couple that just prayed for a McDonald's meal. Hope the health has improved since then. Prayed for a McDonald's meal and it set into motion the changing of lives. Of all these people that I mentioned here, that is here tonight in the fellowship, will you all please stand? Everyone that was in these chains that I mentioned, can you please stand? Maybe I didn't mention your name. Some people are living out of town. Some people are living abroad. 75 people in all became Christians through five people. Through five people that said, I want to be a co-worker. I want to be a fellow worker with Christ. I want to take out just 30 seconds and I want to share my faith and I want to reach out to someone. I just want to say, will you come to church with me? Come to Bible talk to me? Or whatever it is, and see God work and change lives. Brothers, sisters, I want to encourage us. There is great opportunity for us. Around every corner, behind every door, every colleague, every neighbor, to just take out 30 seconds and say, come and see. And that is what will change lives. Let's close out in a word of prayer as the song leaders come up and close us with a song. Father, we thank you so much just that you even allow us to be co-workers with you. It is such a privilege to be able to partner with you and to know that the responsibility, although we many a time feel like it is ours alone, does not depend on us at all but on you. Yet I pray that tonight that each of us will feel encouraged and inspired and spurred and in heart to know, Father, that it's worth it. That sometimes we share our faith and no one responds. But so often it is just 30 seconds of just saying, Please come to church with me. Please come out to a Bible talk, and it can set into motion something that we cannot even imagine as lives are changed for you, where we can put our hope and our faith in you. For we love you. We praise your Son's name. Amen. Let's all please stand as we close out with a song.